Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Sports Talk and SC Wild from DNR. Major Billy Downer joining us here once again on this Wednesday night in South Carolina. Major, good evening. How are you, sir?
Always a pleasure to be with you, Phil. Doing well.
Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend.
We did. It was, we had a few incidents this weekend, but bike week was very quiet for our officers down there at Myrtle Beach, Atlantic Beach. Went down to see the officers down there. I was on Lake Marion a little bit with our unit here in the Clarendon unit, and a lot of people on the water, of course, this weekend, Memorial Day. Very busy. For the most part across the state, pretty safe. Two incidents on Lake Murray. Fortunately, there's any fatalities there, but there were two accidents, unfortunately, though.
Yeah, one in particular I read about, didn't know about the second one. It's always unfortunate when that happens. And anything, I know you can't go into real specifics because I'm sure both are under investigation, but did you notice, absolutely, from what you know or from what you've just gathered, a common denominator in those two wrecks or something totally separate?
Always common in everything. Remember, I tell you that most of our accidents involve failure to maintain a proper lookout. Anytime one boat hits another boat, it's failure to maintain a proper lookout. That's got to be part of the equation. Certainly in these cases, it's at least in one, when you have one boat run over another one, that's part of the equation always. Again, under investigation, I'm sure there'll be more to that. As I tell everybody, you know, when you're the captain of the boat, when you're driving the boat on the lake, you got to be watching all the time. And if it gets dark, even more so, you got to really be paying attention because it's your duty as a boat operator to maintain a proper lookout so that you can see what's going on around you. Again, remember, we talk about that all the time, people falling off boats, people falling off of tubes or skis, and all. There's so much going on out there. And wave and chop can make it hard sometimes. And night, of course, adds its own struggle to it. You know, but if you're going to operate a boat, you've got to keep a proper lookout. That's your duty. So that's just one of those things that's always a common denominator in most all of our accidents.
So let me ask you this. When there's an accident on the lake, what happens from a DNR standpoint? What is the involvement of the agency, and what do you look for? What do your investigators look for as they start combing the accident scene and trying to piece everything together?
All right, so for us, number one, it's just, you know, it's finding out who the operators of the vessels were. Where were the vessels at the time of the accident? Because when you got a lake or you got water or on the coast, you've got, you know, tides, you want to find out where the accident happened. What were the actions of the vessels at the time of the accident? Which ones were underway? Which ones were not? If it's night, you want to know about running lights, navigation lights, to know that lights were on and working so that people could see the boat. But then you start, you know, we start questioning operators and witnesses, and you gather information basically from there. Of course, if you, in the course of investigation, obviously officers are looking out for any other violations like alcohol use, where that could be a factor in an accident, those kind of things. And if those are factors, and you've got other things you've got to do field sobriety testing. And then we have other options where we can actually take blood if there's a bad enough accident, if you feel like you need to do that. So there's a lot of things there, and folks, a lot of folks don't understand that when you operate a boat in South Carolina, just like when you operate a car, you have consented to taking tests, you know, to prove your sobriety, basically. As far as, you know, you understand that. And if you don't, if you refuse, you lose your privilege to drive on a car. And if you refuse breathalyzer, you lose your privilege to boat. Mm-hmm. For a time. So that's in our law there. And there's also functions there to allow our officers to be able to make sure that they're gathering enough information to make to determine what someone's level of intoxication may be. And in the case of a major accident where you've got some death, a lot of times we go to blood alcohol, which is very accurate. There's no line in that. The blood alcohol is not going to lie. It is what it is. And there's all kind of formulas in that of how alcohol dissipates in the body. But blood alcohol is, you know, we talk about your 0.08, that's blood alcohol. Well, there's no better way to get blood alcohol than get it from your blood to get your alcohol content. So drawing blood the best way, but you can't always do that. Lots of the functions in that.
When there's an accident like this on the lake somewhere, whether it's, you know, Lake Murray or Greenwood or whatever the lake is, DNR is involved. Your offices go and you're involved. Who leads the investigation? Is that something that your department leads, or is it turned over to the local sheriff?
No, we absolutely lead anybody in accidents are led by DNR. We have an investigative section, our law enforcement marine investigations. They handle all these investigations from a boating standpoint. So anything that happens on the water, on public water in this state, is our jurisdiction to handle. Now, you talk about what are the things we do. Well, one of the things that's good to mention here is that if someone's involved in an accident on the lake, they are required to report it. That's in the law. They have to report that accident. So somebody leaves a scene of accident and report it, that can be a violation as well. So the first when an accident happens, we generally get notified by one or other parties involved in the accident or a passerby, for instance. But sometimes people don't want to report accident, they leave.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to investigate that. So just like in a car, a lot of things happen. People drive, have an accident, leave. You hope people would stay and try to help. You're also required to render aid to a vessel. If someone's in trouble, you're required to render some type of aid. And that can be as little as at least calling 911, letting somebody know what's going on. Most everybody knows to call 911. They don't have to call Operation Game Thief Line. They call 911. And we'll get the information from the local dispatch. They will transfer that over to DNR so we can get the information.
I was going to say, Pat has pointed out to me that both of these accidents on Lake Murray occurred after 10 o'clock.
Yep. So if they occur in the evening hours and dark, again, that adds a whole nother level of operator attention. Again, when it's dark, it's harder to see. So you need to, when we talk about that, this brings up a couple points, not about these accidents specifically. So I'm not specifically talking about these accidents, but it brings up a good point that we've brought up on the show a number of times. When it's dark, we don't have speed limits on our lake. We don't. But we do have no wake zones. There's those. But when it gets dark, you need to slow down, especially if you can't see good.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's part of maintaining a proper lookout and maintain a safe speed and distance from other boats. That's another one of those rules, is speed and distance. But it has to do with maintaining a proper lookout. If you're going too fast, you can't maintain a proper lookout because you can't see what's going on around you. So when it's dark, you need to slow down. It doesn't mean you have to go no wake on the lake at night, but sometimes when you get in the tight areas and coves and around docks, you need to slow down so that you can see what's going on. That's just a good rule of thumb for anybody boating on the lake. But again, it's Memorial Day weekend. It starts our 100 deadliest days of summer.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope for a safer summer this year than last year. Let's talk about something more positive, like striper fishing, for a minute.
Before you jump into another subject, we do have a caller for you who has a DNR outdoors question. So if you will allow us to go to the phones, 888-898-2525. Is our South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number into SC Wild tonight here on Sports Talk with Major Billy Downer. Sam in Charleston, welcome in to SC Wild with Major Downer. What's your question, Sam?
Well, I have I got three things for you tonight. One is how's Billy doing?
How's who doing?
How's Billy Downer doing?
Major, he's doing fine, thank you.
Three questions I want to ask you about. I was watching the news about, is it Lake Murray kind of thing we've been talking about?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Lake Murray.
Well, I think I just saw a big incident during Memorial Day, I think. What is the safety reason if the boat capsizes? Can you stay with the boat or call help? That's one question. Number two, if the boat is on fire, I can repeat that again. If the boat is on fire, what should you do? Drop and roll or out in the water? And number three is, what is the best part of being outdoors and in the safe zone without, like, speedboats, for example, like no wake zone or kind of stuff? What do you think about that?
All right, Sam, thanks very much. All right, Major, let's go back to the start
first
there.
Question,
so, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. First question was about, so the second was about fire.
The first one was about if you're involved in an accident, what yes. should you do, what's your responsibility, that
so
sort of stuff.
The boat, he talks about the boat capsizing. So
yeah.
We talk about that in our boater education classes all the time. But if a boat capsizes, you need to stay with the boat. If a boat is upside down, stay with the boat because the boat will still float, has flotation, and it's always advisable to stay with the boat. So many people try to swim for shore, and they don't make it. They end up drowning because they try to swim, and they don't make it because they think it's not that far. It's further than they think. So it's better to stay with the boat, stay on the boat, because for us, it's easier to visible. If you're on a boat capsized, it's easy to see the white bottom of that boat from the air or just the bottom in general against the water. So stay with the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Stay up on top of the boat, get out of the water. If it's cold in the wintertime, we tell people to get out of the water. Get on top of the boat as far as you can. It may feel colder out of the water, but when you're in the water and you feel warm, that is a false sense of warmth. It's not. It's actually drawing more warmth out of your body faster. So get out of the water as much as you can.
Okay.
That's in the cold weather now. So as far as a fire, you know, stop, drop, and roll. We talk about that. But, you know, in a fire in a boat, it's why you're required to have a fire extinguisher on board. A B1 covers most boats on our lakes, 1B1. And that, you know, you have that handy. So if you have a fire, you can put it out. Because anytime you got a boat on the water, you know, boats are made of fiberglass most of the time, and they burn very quickly. They will burn. So, you know, if you can't get the fire out, obviously you get in the water. Get away from the boat. That's easy there. And again,
do you have to be concerned about the fuel spill coming out of the...
Certainly that could be a concern, but again, that's a fantastic part of the story there if the fuel ignites and gets in the water. But again, we talk about having your life jacket where you can get to it. We always encourage you to wear your life jacket. If your boat turns over, throws you in the water, if you get your life jacket on, you're going to be able to float. Again, in a fire situation, you won't have your life jacket on, so you hit the water, you're going to have to swim the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Life jacket have to float, you get away from the boat. The last question, I don't know that I understood that, Phil, exactly was asking about speed. You're talking about speed and... I'm not sure.
I think he was asking about speedboats and wake zones and I guess maybe what the laws are about that.
I will say this. I had a caller call me about 2 weeks ago, complaining about a boat on Lake Marion. It was very loud. It was one of these big, what people call a cigarette boat, a fountain-style boat. Long, got three engines in it. Then you got big mufflers. The mufflers are very loud on the boat. It was roaring up and down the lake, and they were asking, you know, what we could do about it. And the fact is, we don't have a speed limit in South Carolina on the lake. And folks really don't want a speed limit. Let me say that. There's a lot of people that say they want speed limits on the lake, but they don't understand what that means. That means you can't go fast either. And you can't, you know, if you start limited to a speed on the water, now when you want to get home, you're going to have to go slow too, just like everybody else. But the safe speed and distance is a rule that is in place already in the Coast Guard about maintaining a safe speed distance. And these big boats, as long as they're on open water and they're out in the open, they can roll as fast as they want to. But again, they got to maintain a safe distance from other boats. So there's no, you know, rules about that. As far as the loudness of motors, unless a county's got a noise ordinance, there's nothing really against that either. Just one of those things, you know, you go as fast as you want to on our lakes right now, on our public waterways. But you've got to maintain safe speed and distance and maintain a proper lookout at all times. And that's kind of the rules of the road for boating when it comes to the questions you asked.
Is there any sort of now you mentioned they can be as loud as they want to be, I guess you just said. So is there any type of a noise ordinance on the waterways about, like, if you want to blast your music – to, you know, 150 decibels?
Every county's got their own noise ordinances, and I leave that to the counties to determine. I'm not familiar with every county, so I don't know the answer to that. But each county has their own noise ordinances. Most of the time, those ordinances are focused around certain times, generally at night, not during the day. Some states have put restrictions on mufflers and things on boats to reduce the noise and things like that, but not in this state currently.
Okay. Sam, thank you for your phone call. Anybody else with a question about boating or safety or behavior on the waters? 888-898-2525 is our phone number. Now, you want to dive into some fishing?
I do. I actually started the morning off on Lake Marion striper fishing. So I got to enjoy some fishing on the lake and caught the
Now, is that work? Does that count as work, or does that count as, you know, just having some fun?
That was not work this morning. I went with a friend of mine in his boat and enjoyed some time on the lake at first light, went out in the dark, and watched the sunrise on Lake Marion. Always a beautiful sight. Always relaxing, get me kind of a fresh start. Haven't done that in a while. And caught two fish. So I enjoyed that. My good friend Ricky Trojan and I went on the lake and just had a really good time. But he's a great fisherman guide on Lake Marion and just knows the area very well. We just went to a couple places where stripers are sitting this time of year. So, you know, it's June 2nd. Here we are. You know, I always talk about Linwood Kearsom up in Lexington. It's football season on Lake Murray starts June 1st. So June 1st and September 30th, you can keep the first five fish caught on the Lake Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, this time of year, the fish are moving toward the deep water, toward the dam. You know, the football we call size stripers or hybrids are from 3 to 5 pounds. Generally, this time of year, they're tearing it up on jigs, again, or on live bait deep down in the water. Again, the reason you keep the five fish is because when you pull them from such a high, a low depth, it hurts the fish. A lot of times they pull up too quick so they can adjust to the depth, and their swim bladder will blow up and things, and so the fish will bulge, and those fish can't be released back in the water and they'll die. So that's why the first five you have to keep. So it's that time of year here on Lake Murray. On the rest of the rest of our lakes, Clark's Hill, the limit's 10, about three, to, you know, three. You can have three over 26 inches on Lake Hartwell. A few big fish are being caught there. In the Santee River system, you know, including Lake Marion, from October 1st to June 15th, your limit is, you know, is three. You can catch three between 23 and 25 inches, and they may be harvested. Only one fish can be greater than 26. So that's a little different there on Lake Marion. And the fish, again, remember we talked about that with our biologist, talking about the history of the striped bass in South Carolina. Typically our bass, even though they were landlocked, went upriver still to spawn. So they'd go upriver this time of year. A lot of them are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the fish I caught the day was really thin, just showing that wear and tear on the fish from spawning and coming back down onto the lake. But so up at the Pax Landing area, up that part of the river, the trestle and up, a lot of folks were catching the stripers in the last couple of weeks. But now those fish are starting to go back down the river into the lake, down toward the dam, into deeper water. And they get in the curves on the riverbed in the lake, and that's where they sit. So stripers, a good thing right now. Remember, alligator season. We got to pick up alligators for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Let me ask you something real quick. Did you look at the video that I sent you?
You send me, which one was that?
Earlier this week.
I can't remember. There was alligator.
Yeah, there was a video of a guy. This is real now. He was fishing, I guess, in a lake or a river. No? Can you catch a stingray in freshwater?
No, it's in saltwater.
Yeah, maybe it's saltwater. Anyway, yeah, I guess it was saltwater. I'm not sure where this was, but in a video, He's caught something. You can't see what it is. He's telling the person in the boat, "Hey, I think I got a stingray. I think I got a stingray. Help me reel it in. Help me, you know, get ready to catch him." He's reeling him in towards the boat. He pulls it up. It's a gator. He caught a gator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they went, "Oh, wow." You know. So my question is, I sent that to you.
You didn't send me that video.
It's on your. Yeah, I texted it to you. I sent it to you. Yeah.
Well, I'll check.
Check
I
your text.
Seeing that. Go ahead.
But my question is, what do you do? I mean, if you're besides, you don't want to pull that thing in the boat, right? You don't want to pull that thing into the boat.
You cut the line and let him go.
But what?
Absolutely, cut the line.
Yeah.
Literal definition of cut your losses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do not try to get that hook out of its mouth, whatever you do.
No, cut the line, let him go. To hook or the hook will rot off later. It's okay.
Yeah.
He'll make it. To the deadline for alligator hunting season.
Yep.
Is Monday, June 15th. Remember that. If you're trying to get into the alligator season for this coming year, the deadline is June 15th. It's not Monday this year. It's June 15th. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But June 15th is the deadline. One more thing, just letting folks know, you'll get your notification about successful drawing for the alligator season around mid-July. Currently, right now, our staff is working across the state. Our wildlife section is planting dove fields. Our biologist technicians worked all through last year in COVID and planted dove fields for folks to be able to enjoy public dove hunting. They're doing that again this year. We're looking at expanding some fields in the future to get more fields. I'm looking forward to Love Farm being open for dove hunting in the next year. In addition to that, July 1st, we're getting close to July. We'll start banding birds from July 1st to August 15th. The DNR banding we do on doves. And again, we band somewhere around 1,700 doves a year. And from that study, banding study over the years, we realized that our dove population is around 13 million. So pretty neat there.
Around how many?
That's what's going on. 13 million.
13 million.
13 million, yes. 13 million.
So there's no limit. There can't be any limits on how many you want to take.
Yes, this limit's 12. It's 12. That's why we've gone back and forth on our limits over the years. It was 15, went back to 12, and we're down. We're back to 15 again. I'm sorry.
All right, let me jump in real quick. We have a caller for you. Let's go to Brad in Oates, South Carolina. Oates, where now?
Yeah.
I think I know everywhere in South Carolina, but where's Oates?
Phil, I call about once every year and a half. You remember, I told you Oates is in between the Lamar Silver Foxes and the Hartsville Red Foxes out here in the country.
Oh, okay. I haven't taken that particular back road yet. But real quick, you got about a minute and a half with the major. Go ahead.
All righty. Well, I'll try to shorten up my question. I'm 51 years old, and about 20 years ago, I tried my first bait called a waxworm for a bluegill and a redbreast and stuff. And they're getting harder and harder to find, but I was going to ask him that, like on a cricket, he knows, you get a missed bite and they'll take your cricket, but sometimes you can catch three or four fish on one waxworm. I was just wondering, do they sell waxworms in any of the bait shops around Columbia or all that? And what's his preference, a waxworm or bluegill for a bluegill?
Gotcha.
I mean, waxworm or cricket for bluegill.
Good question. All right, Major, you got about a minute.
He's right. Waxworms are good. They are hard to find. I don't know of anybody that I know of that has waxworms for sale. The old grub worms, they call them. They're hard to find, but they do sit on a hook a lot longer and allow you to catch a couple fish. Blood worms, the red worms are still good. Your wigglers, those also work. He didn't mention that. I know he knows that, but it just depends. Fish sometimes are finicky, too.
Hmm.
They may want a cricket. They may not want a worm. The grub worm's a good one, though. That's been an old-time favorite. But an old red worm works, too, and you can find those everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And those last good if you run the hook through the worm, up the worm a little bit. Those can last for one or two fish, or at least a two fish sometimes. But unfortunately, I cannot help him with where to find grub worms for sale at. That's a tough one. They are a great bait, though, no doubt about it. But, again, keep in mind, every fishing day is a little different. And some days brim like crickets, some days they like worms. So you kind of got to take both and see what they like that day.
Great job. Thank you for the phone calls. Major, a pleasure being with you. Enjoy your next 2 weeks fishing or whatever you're doing, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Major Billy Downer from DNR. That's SC Wild on Sports Talk. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.